later. Right now, one of my very favorite people in Chicago is coming up to the stage. He is a good friend of mine. He's worked with the Nerdalog some. We host his Poor Choices podcast. He also hosts a great podcast called An Hour with Your Ex. The ex is now his wife. This is Mark Coulomb.
I'm going to do this because this is unnoticed. Welcome to Lake Wobegon. The story of Romulus and Remus never really seemed that outrageous to me based on my childhood. In the founding of Rome, Romulus and Remus, two boys born of a college education virgin, were left to be raised by a wolf, much like my upbringing, but instead of a wolf, we had a diabetic basset hound. My parents were nice enough-ish, but seemed to work very hard, and as such, my brother and eventually my younger sister were left completely to our own devices from a shockingly young age. We had no rules. I mean, there was one rule, and I'll get to that later, but it wasn't even like my parents attempted to pretend that they were in charge. My dad went to work in the morning and came home a little after 7. My mom worked from 3 in the afternoon to about midnight. This created a gap in childhood care from 3 to 7, a void in established order wherein things caught fire, noses were bloodied, and all matter of television violence was watched. It was like Thunderdome, only instead of a midget named Master Blaster, I was a 12-year-old in charge. I believe all statutes of limitations have exceeded, so let me explain the horror. Yes, the horror of my time as a 12-year-old Colonel Kurtz. A single family starter home, though great for a young family with maybe a baby on the way, presents a bit of a problem with a family of 5 whose only standing rule was no punching above the neck. Which even that was broken, proving mutually assured destruction means nothing when you're dealing with nihilists and tweens. With a house that small and my brother and I locked in a hot war that started with the notion of his birth, and continued only with occasional breaks and hostilities for major holidays, though a Tet-style offensive did occur in Christmas of 93. Recent events have found us in a cold war with only the minor overtures of peace, mostly the texting of Simpsons GIFs. For most anxious kids, I imagine the turn of the knob behind them and the lock of the door is a relief from the violence and abject terror of junior high. When I reached my door, I prepared for war. Sometimes I started it, sometimes he started it, but without any rules of order or basic human rights conventions, you never really knew who was at fault. We've always been at war with little bro Asia, haven't we? The roof of our small California ranch home provided a tactical advantage. You had to scale a rickety fence and then sort of leap on a roof, trying not to dangle from a gutter, lampoon style. But once up there, you were safe, at least till my dad bought a longer hose. The fear I can only imagine soldiers in trench warfare saw upon the unveiling of a Gatling gun holds only a tenth of the fear that ripped through our endless war with the introduction of water-based weaponry. There was no safe purchase to be found. Cheap locks on cheaper doors provided little protection to two morons out for blood. The need for affordable housing in California potentially outstripped the ambition of skill of the artisans that threw up our tract home, fast and cheap enough so that my parents could afford it. We tore through that place like Jonathan Winters through a service station. With no parents and absolutely no supervision, we went feral. Why did so many things get set on fire? Because we were good. A teen boy's quest for fire needs no explanation. The patio in the backyard were our testing grounds. Action figures melted, papers burned. If something was underneath a sink, we attempted to see what sort of conflagration we could start with it. Did I mention this was California, a state perpetually in drought? A fairly busy two-lane road behind our home and an overgrown lemon tree provided a never-ending stream of targets and citrus-based weapons. What reason could a kid have to throw produce at a speeding car? We may never know because I have no idea what kid did it. And if my parents ask, you better tell them it was Jared down the street. Everybody blames that kid for everything. I think that motherfucker is still grounded. I saw on Facebook they had to cancel his 35th birthday. I mean, we were like an Outback Steakhouse. No rules, just fight. Although that isn't fair, we did have one rule, and it was never said out loud, and I can't remember if it was ever invoked. It was just the unspoken moron's agreement. thou shalt not punch someone in, around, near, or on, in the face. Do not do that. You look at my brother, you so much think about him, and his nose just starts bleeding. It's just too much evidence. You can't hit him in the face. On advice from my lawyer and fear of standing trial at The Hague, I can only speculate who broke that single rule. It could have been me. Who's to say this many years later? Memory's malleable and subjective. But someone's nose was hit, and it exploded like the fist of the goddamn North Star. There was no going back. I had assured... Someone had assured our mutual destruction. But by removing that one simple rule, we went past Thunderdome to the sort of place I really only feel like Dante or David Simon should be accurately describing. What had been holes in the drywall due to toys being thrown was now due to the sort of things that would get disqualified in the UFC. I mean, it all got to be a bit of a bummer. Eventually, I moved out, and we all grew up. Things have chilled out, and there is complete cessation and overt hostilities. Although I said earlier, we've settled into a cold, maybe cool war. We've developed rules and can even be in the same demilitarized zone together, as long as there's a third party to negotiate our terms. Bless my little Swiss sister. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to see you can make it here today and are healthy and standing.
I mean, the charges, man.
Mark, you're my hero.